Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Medicine, and I welcome you to episode 90 of The Prerogative. Yes, that's right, it is episode 90. The countdown to episode 100 has begun. On this episode, we continue Disney Month. We have a couple more reviews for Disney Month, and still some specials planned for later on. On this episode, we are reviewing a movie that came out in 1998, that took the world by storm, literally, but not to the extent that Disney would have liked, again, causing controversy. This, of course, being Walt Disney's Mulan. The story of the young Chinese woman who opposes as a man and goes into the army in place of her father and comes out a hero. A tale that has been told in many different versions. If you've actually watched the DVD and some of the specials, they talk about how, while they were influenced by that poem, they were also influenced by the amount of devoted stories that came from around the world of similar stories. A movie that has some controversy, again, because of the whole girl power thing. Kind of like, Frozen, which I thought this is a good comparison piece, especially considering a lot of people who have kind of joined my side of the argument on Frozen have sort of argued, Mulan did all this first. What are you talking about? It's Mulan. So I thought it'd be a good movie to review before reviewing Frozen, which I'm going to review next week. I have a special guest for that one to keep me in line, because Lord knows I'm gonna be insane on that review. Oy vey. But that's here nor there, or besides the point. Mulan. It is a movie I've always enjoyed over the years. I always love it. Again, I have the DVD. Some wonderful music, wonderful art. Again, that Walt Disney anime style, as I've proclaimed, that has been prominent through the 90s of its traditional hand-drawn movies that I love so much. And again, it's not one of the things where it's anime because it's Asian. No, it's anime because its style and all the things that make things anime that I am not going to bore people with, again, about what makes something an anime. If you've listened to the show, you know what I feel an anime is, and this fits that category, and not just because it's Asian art or whatever. But, it's just one of the, I find it funny. All this month, I have been building up to the review of what next week's review is, and the movie I'm going to be reviewing after that at the Disney movie. And of course, the Oscars happened this month, and it's just everything has been, oh my god. just making me madder and madder and madder and madder at the arguments of gets traditional hand-drawn and, you know, against movies like this and all the hand-drawn movies that they weren't really girl power or really didn't support girls. They made girls look bad. I look at some of this stuff and I like, are these people crazy? And just wonder, why do people listen to them? In doing the research for this movie, you know, I came upon a quote where somebody said, well, it's all a lie because, you know, she has to become a man to become strong. I'm like, you do realize she became a man so she wouldn't be killed because women weren't allowed to be in the army. That you do realize that, right? It's insane, some of the arguments over the past month I have seen against Disney movies about what the films really mean from people who have no understanding of film whatsoever. They are, you know what they are? They're political pundits that are using animation to further their political views. And it pisses me off. It pisses me off. All the movies I'm reviewing should just be enjoyed. And they've ruined all the movies. But again, with, you know, by the way, no emails, no comments, be with a shot. Why I'm kind of stalling for time here. But it's one of those things to where I just, it infuriates me. It makes me angry. There are literally, before I go to sleep, if it pops into my brain, I'll stay up for another half hour going like, F you! It's just aggravating to, you know, to pop online and, ooh, I love this person's quote. Or somebody on Facebook posts a quote that they love so much, it's from one of these people. And it's the most asinine, insane things that makes absolutely no lick of sense whatsoever. None whatsoever. Ugh. And again, the controversy again, you know, that this movie did well, it did better than the past two, but not as well as Disney hoped. Again, as Disney hoped, and does Disney even bother to maybe look and see why it didn't do well internationally? Like the fact that, you know, the Chinese government sabotaged it by forcing it at a bad time to release a movie, along with the fact there are people that bought a more, I guess, Chinese version. Which, by the way, that's the funny part. They depicted, one of the criticisms from apparently China was that they looked too American. And yet, I can't help but watch this movie and say, yeah, but if they made them more Chinese, everybody would accuse Disney of being racist. It's that fine line there that's like, you can't win either way. But, and it's just, I watch this movie and then I do the research and it just paints that picture why everything's gone downhill in Hollywood, everything's gone downhill in animation, and why I have aneurysms every night. But I digress. Why don't we get to the movie proper? Because we'll probably get into more of this in another rant as I get into the movie. So let's go over a synopsis, shall we? Mulan takes place in ancient China, where the Huns have invaded Han China, led by Shang Yu, forcing the Chinese emperor to command a general mobilization, to where each family has been given a conscription notice and requiring one man from each family to join the Chinese army. When a young woman by the name of Mulan hears that her father has been given a conscription notice in their small village, she is anxious to protect him and her family. So, in the middle of the night, she takes his conscription notice, his sword, his armor, and disguises herself as a man, and under the guise of as her father's son, Ping, joins the Chinese army. She is put under the command of Captain Li Shang, and along with the rest of the new recruits, trains for the day that they will be sent out to battle. They are indeed at one point sent out into battle, and while there, they come under attack from the Huns, led by Shan Yu. But Ping, in the battle, or should I say Mulan, brilliantly takes a rocket and fires it at a mountainside, causing an avalanche, which engulfs the Hun army. But in the process of firing a rocket, she is cut down by Shang Yu and injured, which ultimately reveals her true identity to the army. While she is, because of this, she is supposed to be killed on the spot, but instead, Captain Li Shang spares her life, stating a life for a life, as Mulan had saved his life in the battle earlier. Mulan is making her way home, along with her companions on the journey, which include Kong, her lucky cricket, and a small guardian dragon from her that's sent by her ancestor by the name of Mushu, by Eddie Murphy. But along the way home, she happened to see Shang Yu and the few remaining Huns pop out of the ground from the avalanche and make their way towards the Forbidden City. Mulan makes her way to the Forbidden City to warn Li Shang and, you know, the Emperor and everybody, but no one's listening. In the process, Shang Yu and his few Huns are able to capture the Chinese Emperor and lock themselves in the palace. Under Mulan's brilliant plan, along with the help of her friends, she and her compatriots break into the palace and end up saving the Emperor, and it is Mulan herself who ends up dealing the final blow by shoving a rocket up his ass to Shang Yu. She is rewarded with a pendant and Shang Yu's sword by the Emperor as he thanks her for saving all of China, and Mulan makes her way home as a hero. This is Mulan.
Let's get down to business to defeat the Huns. Did they send me daughters when I asked for sons? You're the saddest bunch I ever met, but you can bet before we're through, Mr. I'll make a man out of you.
Welcome back, and let's get right into it with, of course, the music. And let's start off with the songs in Mulan. I love the songs in this movie. They're just beautiful. I almost said brilliant, but that's really unfair, because some of the songs, of course, I'm more talking towards the end here, aren't brilliant, but they're great songs, they're beautiful songs, and they work for the movie. And that's the big thing, is that they all work in their storytelling elements, and in the way that they move the story forward. The first song is Honor to Us All, which is a great little song. It works perfectly for what it does, and you know, explaining sort of Mulan's, this is her life, she is being basically forced to marry, and this is what girls have to go through. You know, they're expected to be good wives and everything, to bring honor to the family. And, of course, at the same time, showing that Mulan isn't quite that type of girl. And, again, portraying that sort of great sort of opening into the movie. Mind you, not that they opened the movie with this song, but being the first song in a movie, it was the right choice to open with. And, again, it really told that story. And then you have Reflections, which is a sort of the, again, I make comparisons to Frozen here, because you have Do You Want to Build a Snowman and Open Up the Window, which I've always complained to, on a very technical level, are the same goddamn song, but with different lyrics. And they both tell the same story, and there's really no need for each other. This is a perfect example of two songs that are basically back-to-back that are different. They tell different stories, and they work well together. They're so different, yet they work off each other so well because they complement each other so well. In Reflections, again, that whole point of, I'm not this bride. I can't be a bride. Who am I? And really going into the heart of what is Mulan's character is this young woman who's trying to find out who she is. And Reflections, and again, the art in this song is just beautiful, the way it's portrayed in the movie. In particular, you know, probably the most famous part is where she wipes away the makeup, and half her face doesn't have makeup, the other half does, and that whole left side, right side, there's so much artistic sort of ineptitude there that I could, you know, the whole left side, the dark side, right side, the light side, depending on how you see it, the makeup side is the left side, so it's the dark side for her, and then the right side, the pure side, is the one without makeup, and again, those implications there that just are, I love when artists do that. But for that matter, the song works well as telling sort of the strife that Mulan is going through in her life and trying to figure out what she's going through. And then you have the song that made this movie famous. By the way, actually, before I get to the song that made this movie famous, I want to add that, again, you also have several other versions of Reflections. You have, at the end of this movie, the English version, the one sung by Christina Aguilera, and I'd like to say this is where you start seeing not the best pop singers being chosen to sing these songs. Because, I mean, Christina Aguilera does a pretty good job, and for the most part, I actually do kind of like Christina Aguilera as a singer, but there are some parts where I think she sung it wrong. And there are several other versions that are sung. There's a... Let me see. I'm just trying to see if the... Yeah, like, there's a Brazilian... I mean, there was... This movie had so many different languages it was made for. And it had several different soundtracks made for... There's a Brazilian version sung by Cacas Gomes. There's an Arabic version. It doesn't list who sings it. The Spanish Latin America version, which is apparently sung by Christina Aguilera. There's the Brazilian version is actually sung by a woman by the name of Sandy, apparently. I've not seen it. The two other versions I've actually have seen, other than Christina Aguilera's, is I've seen the Chinese version by Coco Lee, who I actually do know who Coco Lee is, and she's a beautiful singer. But my favorite version, is by Lena Park, the Korean version. You know, Lena Park, we actually talked about her a couple months ago, back when we reviewed Romeo x Juliet. She did Raise Me Up, one of the greatest opening themes to an anime ever. And by the way, she is beautiful singing Reflections here as well. Really, go on YouTube, type Lena Park and Reflections and check it out. It is... Her voice is gorgeous. I just find it interesting to see all the different singers for this. And we're going to get into her next song. As I said, the song that kind of made this movie famous, I'll Make a Man Out of You, which is sung by Donny Osmond, who is the singing voice of Li Shang. Again, to go over sort of cast list very slightly here, our two main characters have different singing voices provided them. Mulan is who's voiced by Min Nan Wen, and Captain Li Shang, who's voiced by B.D. Wong. Again, I'll be getting to them later because we'll talk about that. But their singing voices are provided. Mulan's singing voice is Lea Salon. Again, she's worked with Disney before. She did was the singing voice for Jasmine in Aladdin as well. And the singing voice for Captain Li Shang is by Donny Osmond. I'll get to his Chinese voice in a second. And I guess at this point, Chinese voice actor and Chinese singing voice. Because it scares me to this day. But everybody knows this word to the song. To an extent, this has become like the geek song. Of the geek Disney song. Like, let's get down to business to defeat the Huns.
Did they send me daughters when I asked for sons?
I say that because literally, I mean, I swear to God, the other day, I'm with my friends in college, who are fellow anime fans. We're just standing around. Somebody starts singing one note, one line from this song, and all of a sudden, we're all singing, "To be a man, you must drift as a coursing rain of man, with all the strength of a great typhoon of man, with all the strength of a raging fire, mysterious as the dark side of the moon." I mean, literally, everybody knows the words of this song. It's just a brilliant and beautiful song. And it makes me curse Disney to this day, because goddamn you, Disney, for making me like a Donny Osmond song. But as far as the movie, it's a brilliant movie. And we'll be talking about this also when we get to the score, because there's another piece like this. But this sort of channels that classic 1980s American martial arts movie, and you have that montage scene. Perfect example is The Karate Kid. You know, this song reminds me of, you know, that montage song. And mind you, it is a montage song for that matter, because the whole piece is a montage piece. It's a it's a combination of different montages. It's an intellectual along with a rhythmic montage. It's several different types. You know, there are five types of a montage, which was created by Einstein, Sergei Einstein. It's known as Russian montage, and it was one of the early forms of sort of film language, for those who don't know. And the five types of montage are metric, rhythmic, tonal, overtonal, and intellectual. Metric is a very, you know, again, metric, every scene goes like 3 seconds and so on. Rhythmic has sort of a beat, so it goes bump, 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 and, you know, follows the rhythm. Tonal is, can I have to look at my notes, sort of, but as it sort of states, it sets the tone due to the atmosphere. It's montage with that. Overtonal is the combination of all three of those montages. And then you have intellectual, to where it's, you know, we're showing you images and showing you other images, and you combine the two images and it forms an idea. So to an extent, this is an overtonal montage. It really combines all three montages and a little bit of intellectual as well. That being said, it's just a beautiful song, and the way it moves the story, the storytelling elements are wonderful. Again, the whole aspect here of, you know, the camaraderie being built within the plot, as far as the plot is concerned, the song works wonderful for the plot and for the theme that it's running with in the movie, which again we'll talk about a little bit later. But as far as the plot, moving that plot forward of these new recruits, in particular, you know, the new recruits of, like, Yao Ling and Chi Po and the others who, you know, again, didn't get exactly the best first impression of Mulan, a.k.a. Ping. In fact, they hate her guts. But again, them growing as a family, growing as a military union, as a company, and that growth there that you just love to see. But there's also that personal growth for Mulan. You see Mulan, you know, she sees the weakest link of the group, and she's trying to break through. And there's that great scene where she does break through by climbing up and getting the arrow and throwing it back down. And then, you know, she becomes one of the best of the group. And it creates that montage there of everybody showing everybody's growth, in particular Mulan's growth, in particular to finding herself. Again, the song just worked wonders for that, and the lyrics are beautiful. And I love the symbolism in the lyrics, in particular when it comes to later, and you have the "to be a man" reprieve that happens when they do the Mulan's plan, which is, by the way, her Mulan's plan in the movie is to have Yao Ling and Shi Po dress up as concubines. And so I love this sort of symbolism here. So early on, you have to be a man, you have to do all this stuff and fight and blah, blah, blah. And then later you have the reprieve that basically saying to be a man, sometimes you have to be a woman. That's the reprieve to it. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's wonderful. I love it. It's just a wonderful song that I just everybody knows. And everybody, you know, to be a man, you must be swift as a coursing rain. A man with all the strength of a great typhoon. A man with all the strength of a raging fire. Mysterious as the dark side of the moon. Time is wasting toward us to defeat the Huns. No, I'm gonna stop now. Because I can go. I mean, literally everybody knows the words to this song, and it's beautiful. The next song, in a way, is brilliant for its story aspect. It's not the best song lyrically. It's a very fun comedy song, but the reason why I say it's almost brilliant because of what it does story wise is because it's a setup song. And, you know, you don't get to see setup songs that often. And this was a brilliant setup song. They used song instead of just throwing jokes around to set up the scene that follows directly the end of this song. And by the way, it's a good song. Sorry, like, this is, you know, she's around guys. Well, what do guys talk about? Guys talk about girls. Just like girls talk about guys. And their hopes to, you know, find a girl worth fighting for. And that's just, it's this brilliant song because it tells sort of the stories of Yao and Ling and Chi Li Po and all of her comrades. You know, again, why they're there. Again, we're going to get into this subject a little bit when we get to story. Because it deals more with story. It's more important, I think, to talk about it there. But again, I say setup because then you have the song literally stubs. Like, almost in the middle of the song, or at least you think it's coming toward an end, it's about to end, but instead of reaching that end, it, like, stops, and you're at that burnt village, and it sets you up for that oh no moment. And it was brilliant. It was brilliantly played, and it was brilliantly done. Even though it's not the greatest song in the world, it worked for what it needed to do, and it got your spirits up, and then they crashed you. That is how you do a setup. And it worked for the overall story as well, which I really loved. You know, and that pretty much it for the song. You know what? I just realized two things. I mean, we'll get to the last song in a second. I forgot to talk about that Chinese version when I talked about making a man out of you. The reason I wanted to bring it up, because the voice actor for Captain Lee Zhang and in the Chinese version, who also does his singing voice, is Jackie Chan. Yes, that Jackie Chan. You heard me correct. That very same exact Jackie Chan, who we all know and love, and throws himself off the side of buildings. And he also does the singing voice. And you have not scared yourself straight till you've sat down, popped in the Mulan DVD, and watched I'll Make a Man Out of You, sung by Jackie Chan in Cantonese. I'm not kidding. By the way, there's also a version of the DVD of them singing the song, or I believe I'll Make a Man Out of You, in different languages, including Arabic. Really freaky. It really is. But with that, let's move on to the overall music of Mulan. And the score is just brilliant. Again, Jerry Goldsmith does the orchestra here. And there's so many great pieces. I mean, the entire score and composition as a whole works well. I love the use of Japanese instruments here. I think they work brilliantly. It just so wonderful to listen to, you know, again, a lot of those sort of, especially those wooden instruments that they use so well. But then you have You know, you also have all the music and, you know, the Huns attack theme, sort of, which is like the villain theme, Shang Yu's villain theme. You know, dun, dun. And you know what? It really reminds me sort of that villain theme that's used in Pirates of the Caribbean, to be quite honest with you. It sort of has that same type of feel to it that works just so well in this case. Again, the military marches, I think, work wonderful. But in particular, and please ignore my phone, the song that I love probably the most is the song to where, you know, Mulan has made her choice that she is going to, you know, take her father's place. You know, and, you know, after seeing her father and mother sort of have this meeting through a window, and it's this synthetic sort of pop piano type of piece that is brilliant. It makes that scene work. That entire scene is held together. I mean, the scene, the art in it is beautiful, and the storytelling aspect is beautiful, and everything of what she's doing, but what makes it work, what is the glue that holds it all together, is that music. And remember I told you about, you know, sort of that 80s sort of Karate Kid type theme music? That's what I'm talking about here. It instantly reminded me of that. And again, the use of montage to tell these quick succession of scenes that tell this part of the story is brilliant and beautiful and gorgeous. And I love that track. I mean, and for that matter, all of the music is just gorgeous. The opening piece number that they use is wonderful. It's just wonderful. And sorry, I'm getting a bit distracted. I apologize. Because somebody keeps texting me because I don't give out my times I'm doing podcasts. But yeah, I love the music here. And it's just wonderful, and I just enjoy it. And yes, I am keeping all of that in, because it's funny as hell when I'm lost for words. Because you don't get it much often, folks. So with that, let's move on to animation. And let's talk about the style. And obviously the style is influenced by Chinese calligraphy and Chinese art, and that's sort of the Chinese brush stroke art, which is beautiful. One of the unique things you see about this is the twirl. And you see it not just in clouds, mind you, but you see it in tons of other things. You see it in sword handles and little details there. You see it in the way flags wrap and everything. And it's just, again, the way they intermittent the twirl part of the art in a lot of things, again, went a long way to make it beautiful. And that overall sort of watercolor, soft color style that is predominantly of the Chinese art is so predominant in this movie, and it's wonderful. I also love that they really channel the use of colors here. It, again, channeling that inner Chinese, you know, again, for that matter, that sort of Eastern Asia idea that, you know, the Japanese and the Chinese use, to, you know, again, you tell story and you tell emotion and everything through the color that's on the screen. It's, again, I love that they, channeled that aspect of the, that aspect of sort of Asian art for that. I kept wanting to say Chinese art, but again, it really more sort of that Asian aspect of the art of, again, Japanese and Korean and Chinese. They all use this technique of using color to tell emotion and to tell story. So I love that they embraced that and made it part of the movie. And then you have the character design. Now, mind you, of course, the criticism, as I said before, from some Chinese people, is that they said that they looked too American, looked too international. And like I said before, I think if they went too far to the other side, Disney went, or would have been called racist for the designs. I think they're just fine. I think they border on that line, but for obvious reasons, they can't go over that line. And for the most part, I thought they were just extremely well done. Mulan, great design, both sort of her masculine disguise form, along with her sort of feminine form. I mean, each aspect that they draw, because there's several different ways they draw her. Again, they draw her with the long hair, with the short hair, with the hair pulled up as a disguise. It all works wonderfully. Mushu, as a dragon design, works well because, again, in that red dragon, great contrast to some of the colors that are going on screen. And also for the fact of the matter that it works for that comedy aspect that they're going for well, being that he stands out so much. Captain Li Shang, again, works. The color scheme works just beautiful. For the most part, all the character designs work brilliantly. And by the way, I love Shang Yu's design. The sort of grays and the blacks and browns work perfectly. It is beautiful. And I just love it. I thought the character designs worked wonderfully in this movie. And then you have the action animation. And again, just great choreography. Again, I love the motion here. And again, channeling the innerness of the Chinese art. You see it in the way they're depicting the martial arts moves. And again, just the flow of the action animation to whether it be something to where they're doing hand-to-hand combat and they show each punch and it allows you to follow the fight, or whether it be something as, you know, the avalanche, which, by the way, somebody working in the effects department was channeling their inner Hayao Miyazaki. Because I saw that, I mean, it did look like Chinese art, but my first thought of seeing that avalanche coming down was, somebody channels Hayao Miyazaki. Because that looks like an avalanche from a Studio Ghibli film. It really did. And it, by the way, it was beautiful. That whole action scene. And by the way, when I talk about CG being used to enhance traditional hand-drawn art, this is what I'm talking about. This piece is just evidence, A, of why it should be done. Because, again, the use of sort of CG effects and CG models and everything to create the Horde, which is one of the, oh my god, scenes in this movie. In particular, the fact, like, oh my god, this is beautiful, gorgeous, terrifying, everything. Where you have that Horde of the Huns coming over the mountain ridge and racing towards this small company of Chinese soldiers. Oh my god, it is gorgeous, and it is, oh, it is brilliant and beautiful in so many ways, the way they did that. Again, using CG models to make each sort of rider different and to create this sort of Horde of riders. It was great. And I enjoyed it immensely. The action animation just flows so wonderfully and really adds that bit of realism to the film that it needs. And the same could be said for the comedy scenes. The comedy animation works well as well. It's just all brilliant. And then you have, last but not least, the backgrounds and special effects. And obviously, I've talked a bit about it before. The backgrounds are gorgeous. Again, that soft brush Chinese style is so prevalent along with the watercolors. In particular, when you're looking at the mountains. And yet, they do a great job of giving it enough of that 3D effect to where it pops off. And it doesn't look like you're looking at a painting. It looks like you're looking at, again, this world that you can reach. And, like, if I just keep walking that way, I'm going to get to that mountain. And I'm going to get to that pass all the way over there. And so on. Again, this beautiful background work done by Disney, which I think Disney's background work is so underrated. Whether it be traditional hand-drawn, for that matter, or CG, Disney is so brilliant with their backgrounds because it's their backgrounds that are the centerpieces that help create these worlds. And then, like I said, the special effects. I talked about the avalanche. Besides the fact that, obviously, somebody was channeling Hayao Miyazaki, it was gorgeous. The rain scene. Oh my god, the rain scene and the lightning and oh my god, the artistic verbiage that it added to that scene. Oh my god, there's a reason that scene is one of my favorite scenes ever in animation. I love that scene. It's so gorgeous. As I said, the music, and then you add that artistic verbiage through the backgrounds, and the, more importantly, the special effects. And before I go off art, that brings up another thing, the use of shadows. Another thing they sort of took from Asian art, in particular Chinese art, the use of shadow. There are several scenes where shadow is used, for characters. Mushu, when he first meets Mulan, several scenes to where, French is showing her father trying to wield a sword and not being able to. Her seeing her father and her mother sort of almost, not, I don't want to say argument, but for that matter, he wants to be together with her, but she turns away because he has to leave, and it's sad that he's going. That thing that ultimately pushes her to make the decision, I'm taking his place. That use of shadow, and again, that's a great sort of classic Chinese art form that they still use today, the use of shadow puppets. And I love how it sort of channeled that inner aspect of that art style just brilliantly into the film. Overall, when it comes to the art is just gorgeous. It is beautiful. It is brilliant. I love it. In particular, when it comes to the backgrounds and the special effects, the artistic verbiage it adds is death-defying. And the character designs are wonderful. They work so well for each character and what each character is. I mean, when you look at the Three Stooges of Yao, Ling, and Li Po, again, the contrast of their character designs is the small one, the tough one, that beats up on everybody, and the lanky one is the ladies' man, and the big fat one is soft, cuddly teddy bear. And again, that's also going to character personality there. But again, I love that play. That's classic Disney, for that matter. But yeah, it's just, I love it all. So that is it for animation. And I'm going to take a break because Lord knows I need one. And I'm 42 minutes in. So yes, this could be a long episode. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to play some commercials for some friends. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up.
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Dad.
We need to record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you're making me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
Twotruefreaks.com. Hey, Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
ChefPlus.com.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with acting. And of course, with acting, that means it's time to go over our cast list. Now, we won't go over the singing voices, as we've already gone over them in music. But let's, again, go over our cast list. We have Min Nan Wen, voicing Milan. Of course, all of you probably know Miss Ming from a lot of roles, including currently, presently, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. you have Eddie Murphy voicing Mushu. Do I need to go over his wonderful filmography? Beverly Hills Cop, you know, all the other great comedian. B.D. Wong voices Captain Lee Shang. B.D. Wong probably best known for his role on Law & Order Special Victims Unit. Of course, that's where I know him from a lot. I love that character on that show. Yeah, there was a great episode where he took sort of center stage in that show. That was great. He was also numerous. He was one of the wedding planners in baby shower planners in Father and the Bride, which is great. I actually didn't know that until today. I'm like, wow, that was him? Holy crap. Apparently, it's also in Jurassic Park and many other movies. You have Miguel Ferreira voicing the villain Shang Yu. Again, great voice actor, you know, from the villain in RoboCop, the vice president villain in Iron Man 3, among other things. Harvey Weinstein as Yao. You don't know who Harvey Weinstein is? Do you remember Mrs. Doubtfire? Do you remember Robin Williams' gay makeup artist brother? That was Harvey Weinstein. He's also in Independence Day as the New Yorker, like, bah, bah, you need to go to Atlanta. The classic New... I didn't realize, oh my god, there's a New York Jewish accent in this movie. Holy crap, how did they sneak that one by me? Gene Watanabe as Ling, Jerry Tondo as Shen Po, Sun Taek Oh as Fa Zhao, Frida Fo Shen as Fa Li. As Grandmother Fa, they have June Foray. Oh, we got some Disney connections with this one. You remember Lucifer from Cinderella? June Foray. You remember, Granny from Looney Tunes? I was trying to figure out which one do I go with. Yeah. June Foray. Just so many great roles, and I darn it picked up the wrong one. Trying to get down to her cast list here. I apologize, because I do feel it's important, because I love talking about actors. So let's see. Cinderella, Rocky the Flying Squirrel. That was the one I was like blanking on. Cindy Lou Who, Jokey Smurf, Witch Hazel, Granny, Natasha Fatalia, Nell Ferdwick, Magical D Spell. I mean, we're talking about a woman who's so great at voices that apparently Chuck Jones is reported to have said June Foray is not the female Mel Blanc. Mel Blanc was the male June Foray. Yep. That's how good she is. And she's still alive, by the way. She is 96 years young, by the way. I know people hate when I say that. Or when people say, like, oh, he's 96 years young. Right. But yeah, she's in this movie. It's like, you know what? Thinking back of it, yeah, that was her. Oh my god. And she's hilarious in the movie, by the way. And then you have our three, I like to call them guest stars, because they don't have many lines. Oh, Chifu does, but they're all for comedy or different things here and there. And it really is, they found like the three most famous Asian actors in Hollywood and gave them all roles. As the first ancestor, you have George Takei from, again, Star Trek. You have James Hong as Chifu. And if you don't know who James Hong is, get out! And you have Pat Morita, again, coming back to Karate Kid, as the Emperor of China. It's just, you know, Happy Days. And by the way, Happy Days. Because can't forget Happy Days. He was a part of Happy Days. Yeah, it's just a great cast. I guess we'll start with most of the cast, which is the protagonist. By the way, not to leave off the list, but Frank Weckler as Khan, the horse. because you can't have an animal in a movie without it being voiced by Frank Weckler. The legend continues. But I thought they all did a great job. I thought Ming-Na did an absolute incredible job as Mulan. I mean, she just perfect for that role, and she nailed it. She had the right tone and everything. Her comedic timing and sort of the funny scenes was great. You know, she played that real great, strong female lead that you really loved to see. And I thought she did a great job with it. Now, Eddie Murphy, to an extent, surprised me in this movie because I thought he did a great job. And you know, it's a discussion that, you know, I've had with, like, Buds and Joey voice actors like Scott McNeil, who's pointed out that, like, in this movie, he's great. But when it's, you know, something like Shrek, Eddie Murphy's playing Eddie Murphy. And that's really the difference here, is that Eddie Murphy is playing the character. And the character is a sort of, like, almost streetwise talking dragon. But he's still playing a character here, and he plays Mushu perfectly. And I thought he did a great job in the role. Had some, a lot of great one-liners from the start to where he's banging on, like, come on, everybody wake up! Oh, way past that beauty sleep thing! Again, we'll get into comedy a little bit, because there's also slight comedy and everything, so we'll get into all the one-liners and everything in just the little bit when we get into story. Yeah, BD Wong, I thought, nailed Captain Li Shang. Just great job in the role. And again, just great range of emotion throughout the role. They gave him the opportunity and he nailed it. Harvey Weinstein, Gende Watabe, and Jerry Tondo as, you know, Yao Ling and Chi Po. Great job. Great comedic trio there. They all worked well. They whether they worked in the same booth together or not, they had a great connection between the characters through the voices that worked really, really well. And again, that contrast between each character, it fit each character and everything, worked really, really well. I love Soon Tae as the, you know, the father, Fa Zhao. I thought Soon did an absolute incredible job. I really did. He had some of my favorite lines in the movie because, again, in this movie that, yeah, is looked upon as representing girl power and all of those things, you know, what's great is that there's some representation of the other side of the argument to an extent of, I guess, you know, what does the man do? Because that's really one of my issues a lot of times with feminism is they all talk about what the women need to do, what the women need to do. Well, what are the men supposed to do? They have nothing for the men because they don't see the men as anything other than an object, which is the hypocrisy of their argument. And so I love that there's a representation of sort of the guy's what the guy feels he's doing. And I thought Soon did a great job in delivering those lines. I think they were really important. Again, that whole, like, it not seemed so much that I know my place, you should know yours. That's not, but the point of, you know, it is an honor to protect my country and my family. And Mulan goes, so you'll die for honor. I will, and then he goes, I will die doing what's right. It's a great line, and I love the way he delivered it. It just sticks in my mind. And he had that great sort of dry delivery that I just worked wonderfully, and I loved listening to him throughout the movie. And again, he also delivered this really great coup de grace line at the end of the movie to where Mulan has come and, you know, she's offered a sword and the emperor's pendant and just immediately drops it and calls her and just in a great voice with that dripping emotion that worked so well for it. You know, the greatest honor I can have as a father is having you as a daughter. And he delivered it perfectly and it just, it bookended the movie and it sort of bookended the themes and everything. It was just wonderful. I thought he did a great job. Fred F. Roshan did a great job. June Foray, again, hilarious in this movie, as she always is. It's a joy to listen to her. And James Hong, also hilarious. Again, that sort of comic villain asshole. And he plays it so well. He's the villain, but he's really not. He's with the good guys, but everybody hates... He plays a politician. And he plays it perfectly. He plays the guy that everybody hates. George Sakai, for his few lines, I thought he did a great job. Again, it's more of that, like, oh my god, it's George Sakai! And he's awesome. But at the same point in time, he did a great job delivering his lines. He had emotion and everything, and it just worked well and made the character believable for a character that's supposed to be dead. And Pat Morita, because when you want to get an Asian guy to sound wise and important, there are two guys you get. You get Pat Morita, or you get the, who's that other guy? I'm not even going to attempt his name, but he's the guy from the Conan the Barbarian movies that's legendary, whose name, if you say it wrong, a group of people will viciously attack you on the internet, just ask the Nostalgia Critic. Again, it's one of those, oh my god, it's Pat Morita, the master from the Karate Kid. This is awesome. Again, though, he delivers his lines wonderfully. He has the emotion in there. He makes the characters believable. He does everything you're supposed to do. It was a great job. Great nod to the fans. Again, that's our Karate Kid connection there. As you feel throughout this movie, because again, there are slight little Easter eggs and references, I think, to that. But he also had one of the most funniest lines in the movie, I felt. It makes me laugh a lot, that whole, like, you know, the flower that blooms in adversity is the most rarest of all. Sir? You don't find a girl like that every dynasty. I don't know why it makes me... They're stupid one-liners, but they make me laugh so much, and I love them. So overall, all the protagonists did a great job. Even more so, the antagonists. And mind you, the guys who did the Huns and the villains there, they did a great job. But obviously their leader, Shang Yu, voiced by Miguel Ferreira, did... Oh my god. I love this villain. I love that deep voice. It's perfect for this villain. You know, and again, this is a very simple villain. He, you know, his motivation is very simple. The Han Dynasty built this wall to keep me out. I'm going to prove him wrong. I am going to invade. I'm going to jump over the wall. I'm going to attack and defeat his armies. And I'm going to make the Emperor bow to me. It's just that simple. He's not evil as so much as he is a conqueror. He is a tyrant. And he is going to succeed. And again, you really feel that character coming out through Miguel Ferrer's voice. You know, I'll admit, for the longest time, I thought the voice was Alec Baldwin. I can't remember. There's some cartoon movie to where he's done a villain. I can't remember which one it is, though. But for the longest time, I thought Alec Baldwin played Shang Yu. I remember he played some villain somewhere. I just can't remember. It came out the same time, and I'm completely blanking on it, and I just don't, and I hate that I can't remember it. I'll look it up and maybe bring it next review. But Miguel Ferreira did an absolute awesome job. So that's it for acting. So with that, let's move on to story, and let's talk about the overall plot. And, of course, the themes. I mean, the plot is very simple. You know, a daughter sees that her father, who's injured, is being recruited into the army, and so she takes his place. And sort of all the story elements that you would expect of that type of story, of course, happen. But again, the way they pace it, the way they do things with the montages and the music and everything, of Mulan joining the army, succeeding in joining the army, going off to battle with them, being the sort of hero of the battle, of course being caught, but her being such a hero and them having trust in her or caring for her to an extent that her life is spared. Of course, the thing that happened in the Forbidden City, the Emperor getting captured. I mean, to an extent, all those are from the playbook of this story, that's been done so many times, and it's almost a familiar aspect to where, like, it feels like it's been done a million times, though it hasn't been. And that is a bit of a criticism for it, is that it does have that familiar feel, like this has been done before, but at the same point in time, the way they do it is so enjoyable that you hardly even notice it unless you're really, really thinking about it. And so because of that, I thought the plot, the way the plot moved, and all the pieces they hit that were necessary, I thought were great. But one of the biggest things also that really makes that plot work is that underlying theme that works so well in this movie. That theme of, you know, which is to believe in who you are. You know, which, again, we go back to Frozen. Frozen has a very similar theme. You know, not being afraid of who you are. And they're slightly different themes, but they're very interconnected. And here it's believing in who you are. You know, in this movie, Mulan, to an extent, really knows who she is, but sort of refuses to believe it and just be that person. But through her journey in the movie, and that's what a lot of this movie is a journey movie for Mulan to find herself. She finds herself and starts believing in herself, which allows her to defeat Shang-Yu at the end of the movie. It's not by becoming a man, it's not by becoming a woman, it's by being who you are. And I think that's the very important lesson, especially for girls, that they can learn from this movie. It's why so many people love this movie and think it's a good lesson for girls. Because it's not teaching to be a man, it's not, quite contrary to what some people might say, it's not teaching anybody to be a woman. It's saying, believe in who you are. You know who you are, believe in it, and be that person. And no matter what gender or what race or whatever you are, as long as you are that person, you will always succeed. And again, the things that prove it are, like I said before, the whole To Be a Man song. And then you have the reprieve to where it's almost saying to be a man, sometimes you have to be a woman. You know, that contrast throughout her journey and through the character of her being both masculine and feminine, having sort of the masculine strength along with the feminine mental, masculine physical strength along with the feminine mental strength combined to make a great warrior. All that worked towards the theme, and I love how they used the theme throughout the movie. As I said, again, a huge part of this is the journey, and for Mulan, her journey to find herself. And I thought, again, the way they used the journey to sort of tell this story was perfect. It was the perfect choice to make. It worked so well here, again, because you care. They show elements that make you care for her character. And again, like I said, that great scene to where she's decided, I'm going to take over, the look in her eyes. Again, and I could go on and on about that scene all night long. I obviously have all review long. Just thinking about the cutting of hair and everything. And all the story elements, all the way up to, you know, again, there's that. And again, this interaction between the characters that works so well. The relationship between Mulan and Li Shang. You think I'd remember these names by now. Under pressure, I forget the names, and then I go to you. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Under pressure. I'll stop now. But, you know, again, when she comes back to the Forbidden King, City to warn Li Shang, and it's that whole thing of, you know, why should I trust you? You trusted Ping, why should I be any different? But the great, you feel the emotions, and you know exactly what's going on, because in one instance, she has lied to them about being a woman all this time, but at the same point in time, they did trust Ping, because he was a man. Why should they not trust her? And those conflicts that are going through, that again are building blocks of Mulan's journey that works so well. Again, because they built up to them coming around and having respect for her and her gaining honor. So again, I love Mulan's journey. I thought it was done extremely well. I mean, to an extent, the plot is just very straightforward. Again, it's that underlying theme. It's what have I always said? Keep your plot simple. Let the themes of the story, let the character story tell the story, let the music, the acting, and the animation be the verbiage. I've talked about this time and time again. And it's no more prevalent here, because, again, the story is simple, it's very understandable. The theme runs the story, the theme controls the story, the theme moves the story, and the music and the animation and the acting all enhance that theme. And again, it makes for a great movie. And then you have the comedy, as I said, we'll get to in a little bit. The comedy is wonderful in this movie. You know, Eddie Murphy's one-liners are great. You know, from, you know, the whole wake up the... But, by the way, and mind you, it's not even a moment where he says anything. But it's... Again, this is to the artist where the ancestors are arguing and Mulan's there. I mean, Mushu's there and he's, like, licks his finger and... you know, he's reading a newspaper and he licks his finger to turn a page and like, that's a great idea. Look at, like, these stupid ancestors. But, yeah, and, like, things like, you know, my baby's all grown up and saving China. Little one-liners like that, I think, work so well. They had a variety of great comedy. One of my favorites in this movie is the bath scene. We had a hot spring scene in a Disney movie! As an anime fan, this brings joy to my heart because it shows exactly why we love the hot springs episodes in animes. Because this is why. This type of comedy. That awkward, oh my god, I'm with the opposite sex. The awkwardness that I personally find funny. I thought it was just all enjoyable. I actually want to go back because I was just reminded of something I kind of forgot to talk about with the theme, with the plot, with some of the stuff that went on in this movie. Actually, I'll get to that when we get to final talk because I think it is important. But going back to comedy, I just thought the comedy worked extremely well. And I think it helped the movie a whole lot more than it hurt it. Because there were some jokes that fell flat. And one, I think, issues with the comedy is that there's a lot of modern references in it. That don't work as well. A lot of them with Mushu and Eddie Murphy. Again, that's not Eddie Murphy's fault. That's just the decision of which comedy to do. I think it fell flat sometimes and didn't work and took it out of its time period. But more often than not, the comedy did work. Things like June, all of June 4 is on, taking the cricket, walking across the street. Yep, this is a lucky one! Or, of course, the line of the movie. Besides the whole, every woman, every dynasty at the end to where, she brings back a sword. What she should have done is brought back a man, and all of a sudden, like, exchange, they're like, hi, is Fa Mulan here? And it's like, woo! Sign me up for the next war! by the way, piece of resistance of the comedy, let's trifecta, the matchmaker. I love this scene. when she looks for it, can't find the cheating on the fan, but the ink is now on her hand, and it is slowly building up, and a sight gag is coming. A sight gag is coming. And sure enough, ink beard all over her face. It's wonderful. And of course, also during that song, there was a bit of a little Easter egg comedy that I love. And I'm looking up their names real quick, and I apologize for this wait. There you are. Again, throughout Disney movies, they have these little Easter eggs sometimes of animators, and of course, one of the popular ones is of Ron Clements and John Musker. And again, when they're playing the checkers, they're sort of in movie caricatures of Ron Kleister and John Musker playing Chani's chess there. I love that. It made me laugh really, really hard. So, all in all, I just loved the comedy in this movie. I thought it helped a whole lot more than the few ones that hurt. But at the same point in time, yeah, the sort of the more modern references and everything doesn't work. It only really worked with Aladdin because, again, of the genie. But here, with Mushu, it didn't work as much, and so it sometimes did hurt the film. Last but not least, we'll talk about the pace. The pacing of the film was wonderful. The movie goes for about an hour and a half, and you know, it moves at a great click. It never gets tiresome. The songs move everything along. The pace was just wonderful. Again, another Disney movie with a great, steady pace. And as I always say, a steady pace is a great pace. I went to see Hayao Miyazaki's The Wind Rises, and the big thing, and I may have talked about this before, but the big problem that was with that film was that the pace was all over the place because they kept jumping everywhere, and it really, really hurt the movie. And that, this is a perfect example of why you do a steady pace, because it moves this, you know, very simple story and all the themes and everything at a very steady pace. At the end of the day, this is just a great movie. I mean, the things it did in this movie that were really unique. I mean, they had even though she's not a princess, a Disney princess with a black freaking eye by the prince. I mean, they indicate a child's death in this movie. When they get to that burned village and there's the doll. The doll that you saw earlier in Shang Yu's hand, who indicated, I want to give the doll back to this little girl. There's almost an indication that pretty much, yeah, not only did I kill all the army, I killed all the refugees, including the little girl. Like, holy crap. I mean, you have a heroine that shoves a missile up the villain's ass to kill him. Okay, not technically up the ass, but I like the sound of it. It's just, this is what Disney movies used to be. So, I was talking with Pugsley on Rift Down the other night. With TWK, and we were talking about Frozen. Like, she said, well, it's a kid's movie. You have to understand it's a kid's movie. And again, I'm paraphrasing here. But to an extent, that is my point when it comes to these movies. These movies are for everyone. There's nothing in it too severe, so it'll stay for kids. But a lot of the big story elements are only understood by adults. There is something there for everyone. And more importantly, we didn't treat kids as if they were stupid. As opposed to things like Frozen and the such, which act like children are stupid. And tell a story that doesn't feel like it's for everyone. And that's the element of Mulan, is that Mulan is for everyone. And it's just great. It's wonderful. It truly is this movie to where it tells the idea of, yes, women power and girl power and all that, but tells it in a way that doesn't offend everybody and doesn't poke fun at everybody and doesn't villainize anybody. Because at the end of the day, what makes Mulan so great is that it's about finding oneself and believing in oneself. And it allows Mulan to become a character that can be both a hero to both girls and boys. But to an extent, that's why the feminists hate it, I think. Because anytime there's a character that is beloved by both men and women, oh, then it's really only created for men. But that is the plus side to this movie, is that it doesn't have a political side to it. Outside of arguing, why is Disney just running their hand-drawn, you know, animation studio? But, yeah. So, at the end of the day, Mulan gets a 4.5 out of 5 from me. It's not quite perfect. There are some things, you know, in fact, I'll go 4 out of 5. Not 4.5, I'll go 4 out of 5. Because there are a couple things here or there, some executions on elements that are not complete and not, they're not flawed, but some execution elements that they didn't do right, that didn't work. But at the end of the day, this is just an absolute incredible movie, and I love it so much. I love the songs. I'm going to be singing To Be a Man all night long. It's just wonderful to listen to. So, 4 out of 5 from me for Mulan. So, that is it for this episode, Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if you have any comments of any kind about today's show that you want to leave me, remember, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can email me at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave me a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to www.facebook.com and by searching for the Absolution Network. Find us, like us, and leave us a comment. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.ad.132productions.com. Also, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content, which, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum and CM Shoes Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network, the Shaft Plus Podcast, where you can find Gene and Chris talking anime, and their Anime Boston episode is up. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. The Tokyo SOS Podcast, which now has a new review out of Rodan, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, my comic book crazy podcast with Hexcast, Spectacular Webs, and the brand new reborn CM Juice comic book crazy podcast. So, and also, while you're on any of the sites, remember to check out the sidebar that includes my friends like Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas and the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher in the Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course Scott Gardner in the 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many more. So check them out, they do great stuff. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, I think I've indicated it, I'm reviewing Frozen. And I'm going to have some special guests to keep me in line. One of them is the aforementioned founder of 132 Productions, or co-founder of 132 Productions, and great friend of mine, my boss, Chris Stanton. And I may have some more, but, you know, right now he's the only one, but, you know, next week we review Frozen. And I'm going to do my best to give an honest review that isn't me going into a rant about feminism. I'm really going to try. But I make no promises. So, next week, my Toonami Generation, we review Frozen. So until next time, my Toonami Generation, remember, it's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden!
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.